Welcome to DAD, Dads Aren't Deadbeats, a community of care and compassion in observance of the Golden Rule. Come and join us and contribute to riveting conversations about fathers, their children, rights and agency.
It's Monday.
It's National Chocolate Mint Day.
Oh, chocolate mint day, Matt. Oh, my favourite, hot chocolate with a bit of mint in.
Absolutely. So if you're sat at home and you're listening to this pod, crack open the After Eights and let's get into it.
And you are very welcome to the DAD podcast today. So here we are again, back in the shed for a fifth week on the trot. How's it going, big man?
It ain't going too bad. It's been a bit of a rough week, all things considered.
Why? What have you been up to?
Oh, yeah, and getting into lots of trouble doing it, but you know, that's how it goes.
That's it, in with the good and out with the bad,
indeed,
as you say. So today we're going to be focusing on things to expect post-separation, guys. We're hoping to offer guidance and advice on the complexities that follow a marital breakdown. Hopefully you can appreciate the crossover this episode has with the previous two, but today we will explore those unexpected things that appear post-separation. Now, as always, the public disclaimer, we're just two dudes sitting in a shed, supping tea and vaping. Hopefully you saw the post we've done today. And it says the exact same thing. We're not experts, but you know, we'll always do our best to bring you accurate information in a responsible way.
Indeed we will. So we've spoken extensively about how challenging and emotionally taxing a divorce can be. Frequently, the single best way to represent yourself during a divorce is to seek legal representation. Now, this will not be possible for all of our audience, and so later in the episode, we discuss alternative approaches, including self-representation and the use of a McKenzie friend. Selecting a good legal brief is a good method of achieving a fair and favourable outcome in the legal process that is a divorce. Part of this podcast is dedicated to methods of sourcing an appropriate solicitor. So Lee, what's the first step in sourcing a solicitor?
So I believe the very first thing you need to do is assess your needs, guys. You really need to assess what's going on. So this is particularly difficult when the world around you is crumbling apart and you don't know what you're doing from one day to the next. You have to consider the nature of your divorce proceedings, including asset division, child custody, and any criminal charges that may be part of your proceedings. Now, knowing your desired outcomes will aid you in sourcing a solicitor with the appropriate range of expertise and experience relevant to your individual circumstance. According to Family Law Partners, this was 2022, clarity about your goals lets you clearly articulate your requirements effectively when consulting with potential solicitors. So, Matt, what would the next stage be?
So, having gone through this with you, I think the second stage would be seeking recommendations, right?
Definitely.
Now, this can be difficult if you do not know anybody who has gone through a divorce. If you have friends...
I'm going to stop you right there, Matt.
Yeah.
Especially with this, like I said in last week's pod, with this COVID pandemic, I'm sure we all know somebody who's gone through a divorce, mate.
No, absolutely. All right, so assuming you know somebody who's done this, who's gone through this, the process becomes a little easier. You can reach out to friends or family for personal recommendations, but in the absence of this, there's an excellent UK-based website that can help you with this. It's called Review Solicitors, and it offers critical reviews of the effectiveness of solicitors in a range of different disciplines. This website is available at www.reviewsolicitors.co.uk, and a link to this will be placed in this week's show notes. This site offers first-hand reviews on solicitors' professionalism, their communication styles, and commitment. So let's move to stage three. Lee?
So for me, researching solicitors was essential. I had to look for local solicitors who specialise in family law. This involved using online directories, including Review Solicitors, the Law Society, and Solicitor Info. I found that paying attention to a range of factors was essential in the research process. This included looking at their experience, examining their qualifications, looking at their track record for success, and looking tentatively at their reviews.
Why were you only tentatively looking at reviews then?
Well, it's like we said in episode two when looking at Kafkas. People who are disheartened by the legal process are more likely to offer less favourable reviews. They are also more likely to complete a review over those that have a broadly positive experience of the legal process. So once all the research is out the way, You will then need to schedule appointments. Matt, would you like to tell us a bit about this process?
Sure, absolutely. So I would recommend scheduling appointments with a short list of solicitors if you can afford to do so. Now, many solicitors will offer a free 30-minute consultation, although these consultations can stretch beyond the 30-minute boundary, so do be careful of that. Now, we at DAD recommend treating these consultations almost like interviews. You need to arrive prepared with a series of questions to ask about the solicitor's approach, their fees, their communication practices, and their strategies. Within the consultation, you will have the opportunity to gauge the solicitor's level of empathy, responsiveness, professionalism, and understanding about your specific circumstances. Whilst it may seem insensitive, asking about the solicitor's caseload and their availability to dedicate sufficient time to your case is a reasonable request. So Lee, significant consideration has to be the solicitor fees, right? Let's tell listener Land a little bit about that.
100%, cost and fees have to be a serious consideration when going through the divorce process. So when you do consultations with solicitors, there is a value in inquiring about the solicitor's fee structure, including hourly rates, retainer fees, and any additional costs such as court costs, barrister fees, or expert witness fees. Discuss payment arrangements and potential billing options in advance so to ensure transparency and avoid costly surprises down the line. So Forbes 2021 have suggested that whilst cost should not be the sole factor in selecting a solicitor, it is essential, and I mean essential, to find a solicitor whose fees align with your budget and overall expectations.
Now, one of the things we've been talking about today is the fact that solicitor fees can be somewhat prohibitive for some of you. And so we'd like to revisit the idea of McKenzie Friends and offer you more information on this. Lee, would you like to kick us off?
Sure, here we go. So in family court proceedings, individuals may face complex legal challenges without the assistance of legal representation. In such situations, McKenzie Friends act as lay or unqualified advisors, offering support and guidance to an individual navigating the legal system. We will examine this function, the benefits, the limitations, and ethical considerations of this role. So, dude, you're the history buff. Tell us a bit more about this role.
I will, but I actually think you probably have as much in the way of history notes for this episode as I do, so perhaps we'll sort of share out some of these responsibilities because I know you've done a hell of a lot of work on this.
Oh, thank you.
So McKenzie Friends are individuals who assist parties in person during court proceedings. They provide moral support, limited legal advice, and practical assistance. The role originated in the landmark case of McKenzie versus McKenzie, where the House of Lords recognised the right of litigants, those are persons bringing a case to court, to be assisted by non-lawyers in court. McKenzie Friends have become integral in facilitating access to justice for individuals who are not represented. They are particularly seen in family law proceedings.
The right to a McKenzie Friend was established in 1970. So this could be someone close to you with certain knowledge of the area, but they can be liable if they give any misleading advice. Now, be careful with that, guys. So McKenzie versus McKenzie was a divorce case in 1969. Levine McKenzie, I think I'm pronouncing that right.
That's right, yeah.
He had been legally aided, but the legal aid was withdrawn before the case went to court. Now, the case had been given to an Australian barrister who obviously passed his degree overseas, and he lived in London.
Okay.
His name was Ian Hanger. However, qualification in law in Australia didn't allow him to practice as a barrister in London. So the case was against McKenzie, who appealed because he had been denied representation. So this is where a McKenzie Friend was born. Would you like to
elaborate?
Yeah,
can do. So yeah, so the right to a person having somebody represent them in court who is not a legal representative came about as a direct consequence of that case. And McKenzie Friends provide a valuable alternative to solicitors, essentially, in that they often charge a much lower rate than solicitors, but at the same time, they don't have the bar qualification that allows them to act in court in the same way as a solicitor might be.
McKenzie Friends offer a range of invaluable services to litigants. This can include, but would not be limited to, explaining court proceedings, assisting with paperwork, organising case materials,
and providing emotional support during the hearings. A Mackenzie friend can often alleviate stress and anxiety, which is often associated with having to navigate the legal system alone. The Law Society of England and Wales acknowledges the important role of Mackenzie friends in ensuring litigants have a fair hearing and access to justice. This is particularly true when the litigant is in a vulnerable position.
Absolutely. So most people who perhaps could not afford legal representation in court might be considered to be in a vulnerable position.
Yes.
And therefore, the Mackenzie Friend system provides a good stopgap for support in court for people who would otherwise not have that support in place. That's going to be particularly pertinent as we get into a discussion around the role of legal aid later in this podcast. Yeah. And hopefully you'll be able to appreciate how complex it is, listener land. But the cuts to the legal aid system have meant that we've seen an increase in the number of Mackenzie Friends operating in the United Kingdom. So Lee, that's great hearing about the role of the Mackenzie Friend, but there are going to be limitations too. We should have a look at some of these as well. So now, despite the benefits of Mackenzie Friends, they have faced controversy and criticism. Concerns have included the reliability and the quality of the advice offered by Mackenzie Friends, as well as conflicts of interest or unauthorised representations.
Absolutely. There have been cases where Mackenzie Friends have overstepped their role or have engaged in unethical behaviour, raising questions about accountability and regulation in the Mackenzie Friends system.
There are whole groups of people who undertake the role of Mackenzie Friends, and we've linked one such organisation in our show notes. For some of you, this approach may not work, and there is the option to apply for legal aid.
Now, legal aid is a vital element of ensuring access to justice for all members of society, regardless of their financial circumstances, guys. Legal aid was established under the Legal Aid and Advice Act 1949 and aims to promote equality, protect individual rights, and facilitate fair legal proceedings. So in theory, it is to uphold the rule of law.
Absolutely, that was always the purpose of it in a post-war Britain, to be able to have all citizens represented equally in court. So in the UK, a person's right to access legal aid is often determined based on a series of factors, including their assets, their income type, the type of legal issues they are facing, and the merits of a case. Those applying for legal aid must meet a specific financial eligibility criteria. Now, this criteria is likely to vary quite significantly based on the type of legal matter that is being decided.
That's right. So despite its importance, legal aid is not universally available, and certain groups are excluded from applying for this. The Legal Aid Sentencing and Punishment of Offenders Act 2012 introduced a large-scale reform to the legal aid system, resulting in stricter eligibility criteria and the removal of the funding for certain types of cases.
Would you like to say the name of that act again?
It was a mouthful, wasn't it?
Should we shorten it? Should we call it by its abbreviation? Let's call it LASPO.
Hopefully that's a good abbreviation, because you remember when we tried to come up with a name for our platform, and do you remember them abbreviations we went through?
Not quite as polite as LASPO, were they?
Yeah. If you haven't heard them, guys, I think they're in our preface on the podcast.
They are indeed.
They are.
So yeah, and as a consequence, individuals who were deemed to have a moderate income, some assets, or cases deemed to be outside of the scope of legal aid may be ineligible for assistance, leaving them vulnerable to unmet legal needs and barriers to accessing justice. So we'd like to talk you through just a little timeline just now of the implications associated with LASPO and what that's meant for legal aid and the legal aid system in the UK. So in 1949, the legal aid system is first introduced. It's a post-World War II Britain, and it means that families who could not ordinarily afford a solicitor could now get free help with legal fees. This meant that 4 in 5 people in the UK became eligible for civil legal aid. Now, in 2010, the banking crisis and austerity agenda landed, and it led to planned spending cuts. What this meant in real terms was that by 2013, the LASPO Act had cut legal aid from large swathes of the population. So whereas people that were able to qualify for legal aid in the 1940s, that wasn't the case anymore. So people couldn't get help with many family, employment, housing, and debt problems in terms of legal support. And according to the Law Society, between 2012 and 2013, the number of new legal aid cases had dropped by 30%. In 2016, the number of legal aid providers had dropped by 37% compared to pre-LASPO. So that's 37% drop compared with pre-2013. And in 2018, people living in poverty were recognised as being unfairly disqualified from legal aid because of the means test that was introduced. That's the test that's introduced to measure whether or not someone can qualify for legal aid. By 2019, at least one in three people lived in what Law Society describes as a legal aid desert, with no legal aid providers to help with the housing problems or their local authority issues or family law. By 2020, only one in four people were now eligible for civil legal aid, which is quite different from the four in five at the point it was introduced. In 2022, the number of legal aid cases started had dropped by 85% since 2000.
That's crazy.
It's absolutely bizarre, isn't it?
That is crazy.
And it quite evidently is penalising the poorest of society above everybody else, and that just seems ridiculous.
Again, legal aid should be a privilege for people. Actually, not even a privilege. It should be a right for people to have, like we said, legal representation when they can't afford to. Now, four in five people when this first started, that basically meant everybody, to be honest. I know it sounds crazy, but everybody was entitled to legal representation. But nowadays, you have to meet a certain criteria. Mm-hmm. You have to show certain evidence. Now, in some cases, you might get legal aid where you don't need evidence, Matt.
Indeed.
Which, again, would you like to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so there are certain criteria that allow you to gain legal aid in the absence of any evidence. And whilst we're not going to say too much about that right now, there are going to be forthcoming vlog episodes hitting our website very, very soon. And one of them will be on this very process, how you can go about securing legal aid and what dimensions you need to meet, what means tests you need to meet to achieve that. Yeah. It is chronically unfair, even now, because the criteria that you can use to meet the legal aid requirements, the Law Society and others believe is a system that's now being abused to secure that legal aid funding. And that shouldn't be the case. If the legal aid system was universally available, as it had been in the 1940s,
yeah,
people wouldn't need to but do you exaggerate to achieve the same thing.
Obviously, going back to when it was four out of five people who were eligible, do you think the reason why it has dramatically decreased over these years is because it has been abused?
No, so I think the reason it's been decreased is purely because of austerity measures. It was purely a cost-saving, money-saving effort. And, I mean, what we'll learn now is if you come up to the present day, or at least until 2023, what you see now is the government announcing a review on civil legal aid. It's due to report on that this year. So 2024, it's going to give a report on the civil legal aid process and hopefully we'll make some recommendations for improvements. I don't think personally we'll ever go back to that almost near universal coverage.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's the money to do it. It's a very expensive process, and every one of us, listener land, would have to pay higher taxes if it ever came back to something like that. But I think the playing field's going to be levelled a little bit at least, and it become somewhat fairer.
So in your opinion, would you say legal aid is more benefited to people who don't have a regular income, who are sourcing benefits of some sort, or people who do work?
Well, that's essentially who I think it's meant for, and necessarily so. That's who I think it should benefit, because if you're in a position where you're not at work, for example, you should still have the right to legal representation. If we're invested in what's true and the rule of law, then legal representation is essential in that cycle. And so I think that I want people that are most in need to have access to it. The problem comes, I think, when any system is open to being abused and manipulated, yeah, because it shuts so many people out.
Yeah.
So I think you give people an incentive to meet a criteria, an arbitrary criteria,
yeah,
if you shut them out, if they otherwise couldn't get that legal support.
And I think legal aid now it's constantly ongoing with the changes that they are doing year after year, mm-hmm. Matt. Again, I'm sure we'll see some more changes in that soon. And yeah. Some new stipulations.
Well, hopefully this year the government review will be reported, and Lee, Dad will definitely be on scene to report on that as soon as that report becomes available.
100%.
Absolutely. We're keen to see our government, whatever colour that government is, whether it's yellow, red or blue, we're keen for them to do the right thing by people, and yeah. So we will report on it, whoever happens to be in power at that point in time. This is, after all, likely to be a general election year.
And this could go in our news section on the website, couldn't it?
It absolutely will.
When we eventually get that up and running. When.
That's all, folks.
Where's the carrot? So, come on then, Matt. So, because we've been discussing solicitors in the pod, would there be value in exploring the cost of legal representation in court for, obviously, people who need to obviously pay themselves?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
So the cost of legal representation is very much like to depend on a number of factors.
Right. Where you live, the nature of the cases, whether or not there is one case being heard against you or more, the number of hearings you may have to attend, the additional cost of barristers if you're in an advanced case, such as non-molestation and occupation orders, or some child arrangement hearings.
So as we go through the potential costs, we would remind you that these are average costs rather than being definitive costs. As Matt said, a number of factors can affect this, so solicitors tend to invoice at hourly rates, so these are the average rates in the UK. At the lower end of cost, a recently qualified solicitor may charge somewhere in the region between £150 and £200. An experienced solicitor working within a law firm will charge anywhere between £300 and £400, and lawyers at the higher end can charge between £500 and £1,000. Now, that is per hour, guys. I'd love to see some of your faces now at realising the cost that this can reach. Now, we recognise that this can be regionally dependent, though, and in London these fees can be 10% higher, so thank God we don't live in London.
Absolutely. You are talking about these being large sums of money, although both Lee and I are of the belief that if you are going into court, you should do so either with a solicitor or with a Mackenzie friend at the very least.
Yes.
If you can afford to do so, and definitely if you qualify for legal aid, you should be doing that. So what's important to remember here is recognising the amount of work your solicitor has to do, both in court hearings and in preparation for these. As we said earlier, having a rough estimate of how much proceedings will cost should be a component of your thinking when you secure a solicitor.
Now, Matt said earlier that there will be additional fees if there are any criminal proceedings levelled against you. So, for example, if you're fighting a non-molestation order or an occupational order, it may be necessary to have a barrister represent you. Now, we know barristers are more qualified than solicitors.
Absolutely.
Which yep. means a higher cost.
Yeah. So in brief, and in order not to bore you all to death, solicitors are the primary point of contact for clients seeking legal advice. They provide direct services to clients, including offering advice on legal matters, drafting legal documents, negotiating settlements, and representing clients in court. Barristers, on the other hand, specialise in advocacy and litigation. They follow a more advanced academic pathway and are qualified in a different way from solicitors, often following a specialist legal route. Barristers are instructed by solicitors, or sometimes by clients directly, to offer expert legal advice and can represent clients in criminal proceedings. Barristers are often required to offer legal arguments in court and to cross-examine witnesses.
Now, according to the Bar Council for England in 2021, the average hourly rate for a junior barrister, so that is with up to 5 years experience, was £200 to £250 per hour. Senior barristers, those who are more than 10 years of experience, charge an hourly rate of between £350 and £400, again, per hour.
Which is a lot of money.
That's why I keep saying per hour, because I'm in shock. Mm-hmm. I'm in awe. Mm. I would love to. If I knew I was going to work and only £350 an hour, I wouldn't be at home.
Yeah. But so to be completely fair, I absolutely agree with what you're saying there. But to be fair to barristers and solicitors as well, indeed, a barrister will often have to work for
much less than that for several years. So they can spend up to 5 years in a legal firm as a barrister earning marginally above minimum wage.
Yeah.
So it's very much like doctors, right? If you go in as a junior doctor, junior doctors make a poor salary for 5 years,
yeah,
and then make real money after they've done their 5 year time. It almost seems cruel, that, because if you think about any other career, you wouldn't go into a workforce or a work job with a qualification and work for less than the value of that qualification, and yet barristers and doctors are expected to do it all the time. So I can absolutely appreciate that it's a shocking sum of money, but these are experts who are bringing a skill set into a legal environment that we perhaps couldn't do ourselves.
Now, remember, guys, when you're sourcing a solicitor, remember they each have their own specialisms. For examples, you know, you could have family law soliciting, personal injury, wills, and so on. So, in my opinion, to find a solicitor, mostly is word of mouth.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't personally have that privilege.
I didn't. I actually went, you know, I'm going to do two fingers and what's that phrase there, Matt?
Air quotes.
Yeah, air quotes. I'm going to do two fingers. And I went shopping for a solicitor. And again, it was daunting. You know, you go in, again, we're talking about, I remember the whole self-care episode. You're going out your comfort zone. You're doing something you wouldn't ordinarily do. And it was like a world that you wouldn't expect to be in. You go shopping for a solicitor. Yeah, I'm quite happy to pay, you know, up to £1,000 an hour because I'm loaded, obviously. You know, that's why I work, you know, try and work 7 days a week. And now, bearing in mind, guys, you know, enough of the jokes now, but when you are sourcing a solicitor, and like Matt did say earlier, please take the 30-minute consultation for free. But again, watch that you do not go over it. You have to bear in mind not just the per hour cost, but the costs going down this road. You know, it is a long road. It can be a long road. It can be a short road. But you need to be ready for the costs. Now, you will have unexpected costs, which all of a sudden you'll get an invoice and you'll be in shock and you'll think, whoa, how? Thousands and thousands. And then you think, crap, right, you phone your boss up. Have you got any overtime? I need some overtime. I can't afford to do it. So what I'm trying to say is just make sure you're meeting the needs to obviously keep the solicitor that you've chosen, because if you don't pay, it goes away.
And I think it probably looks very different depending on how amicable a separation is, right? If it's a relatively amicable ordeal, not that many are.
Expect it to be short and sweet, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and cost less.
Yeah, 100%. But then you do, obviously, like I said, you get the unexpected costs further down the road. You get the court dates come in. Again, you know, it depends. Again, if you're fighting a non-molestation order, for example, or an occupational order, you will have court dates come up, which, again, guys, the cost of the courts are not cheap, as well as your solicitor's time are not cheap. So all I'm going to say is please bear in mind that it is a very hefty process financially.
I've got a good one for you, though.
What's that?
I was sat in a pub with a mate several years ago, and he was going through a divorce. And he'd sat there, and as we were sat in the pub, I pinged through on his phone, he gets an invoice. And he says, fudge me, 600 quid. How have I run up 600 quid this week? And we said, well, what's been going on? And he's gone, well, not a lot. I ain't spoken to her, really. I said, what do you mean, really? He says, well, I called her about half a dozen times for 15 minutes at a time. And I was like, she banks that time into an hour. So even if you have a 15-minute phone call, it adds up.
So let's just say, for example, you choose a mid-level solicitor between £300 and £400 an hour. Mm-hmm. Let's just say you make a phone call because it's that urgent, it can't wait. You make a phone call. Now, I haven't worked this out, and I don't know if you can in that smart head of yours. But
try.
If you're on the phone for 10 minutes, Matt.
If you're on the phone for 10
minutes. You're getting charged, say, £400 an hour.
So you're looking at about.
And he hasn't got a calculator, I can assure you. He hasn't got one in front of him.
40 quid for 10 minutes.
We'll let listener Land see if that's right.
I believe it is.
Now, can you imagine that you're on the phone for 10 minutes and it costs £40?
Mm-hmm.
It's like ringing up one of these stupid hotlines, isn't it, that costs you about £10 a minute. It sounds absolutely stupid.
Well, let's be careful. I'm not sure the solicitor wants to hear that it's like calling up a hotline. But in fairness, I think that
if someone wants to phone me, I'll quite happily charge £40 an hour.
But so to give props to your own solicitor, and obviously we're not going to use names because there's legal reasons for not doing so at this stage.
Yeah.
To give props to her, every time you've had these 10-minute phone calls, they've been moments of gold.
They have, and bless her, she knows that a lot of times, for example, I will be the one doing the chasing and trying to find out certain information. Mm-hmm. And bless her, the amount of time she said to me, do you know what, I won't charge you for this call because I know you're chasing on what you've asked originally. So they do try to look out for you. You know, they will try and cut costs, again, if you have a good brief where necessary.
And they'll quote you on approximate costs on the first meeting, right? If I remember correctly, when
they do, they give you a rough all-in estimate, and it should stay between that estimate. But again, we all know that going through legal proceedings, unexpected things happen. But like I said, when you are sourcing a solicitor, you know, speak about a retainer. Now, you know, bank some money as a retainer to keep in case you do hit hard times. You know, you can even ask if you can pay as you go, just like a mobile phone bill. I don't know if anyone does pay as you go anymore, if that's still a thing.
I think it's still a thing, you know.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, I don't know why you would, because it's like...
It's got to be all the old people, though, surely. It wouldn't be the...
Probably, but again, isn't that, you know, if we keep going on about social justice. Isn't that awful that phone companies will do that to older people, especially when you can sort of go out and buy a SIM-only deal for £9 a month?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And it's like these people who pay £70 a month for a phone. It's crazy.
You're knocking at your old man there.
It's crazy. I'm talking about my old man, by the way. But, you know, ask about a payment plan, because you need to know what you're going in there for.
Yeah.
You need to know how much it's costing you. And like I said, you will get all of a sudden into the hundreds, into the thousands, especially if it is a long process going through divorce, with children involved, with, you know, property, with cars. Like I said, it's a very long process. So please, please, please make sure that you are financially stable to have a solicitor, especially one that can meet your needs.
So let's rock on.
Yeah, so like you said, obviously we spoke about telephone calls. And now I'm going to obviously say to people, because I think hopefully Matt's right when he said £40 an hour, but only ring if it's absolutely necessary, you know, because again, time costs money, you know. Again, now, if you're worried about cost, again, you would have to phone, which would cost you to phone up and see how much, you know, basically debt or should we say debt you're in, or how much you owe. And I'll be brutally honest with everybody in listener land, you will be in the thousands in such a short space of time. It is scary.
It can be. But so again, just to stress that this does depend on the kind of separation you're going through.
It does. Like I said, short and sweet, you know, short and sweet, you're sweet, and yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to cost you maybe an hour's, you know, an hour. Let's get it done in an hour. Sign a piece of paper. Yep. On your way. We've done nothing but bang on about the concept of truth on our channel. So my advice to everybody would be to do this. It can feel like you're fighting a metaphorical battle, not against your ex, but against the system. For me, it has been very important to embrace truth and to think about what it is I wanted. My advice to you would be this: stand on what you know to be true and not what you believe to be true. Do not allow another human being, through manipulation of the system, to label you as something you are not. Come on, you know what you are and you know what you're not. And most importantly, when you face these battles, know that you're doing it for them. Your children should be the thing that you wake up and fight for every single day. And whilst this may cost money, time and effort, they're all worth it. So sign me up for the overtime. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely, too true. Invariably, when court proceedings appear, it's often necessary to take time off work to attend these hearings. This can come at a cost as well. Lee, I know you get paid. You don't get paid if you're off work. Is that right?
I do. I mean, you get so many days. I think we get 20 days holiday a year. So again, I'll be using the time from work to book off as holiday to make sure that I do get paid, because every day matters. That's why I go to work every day. And again, like we just established, solicitor fees are very, very costly.
Yeah, there are some court cases, civil litigation, for example, where you do not need to be present. In family law cases, though, attendance is mandatory, and this is certainly the case in criminal proceedings that might emerge from non-molestation and occupation orders.
Now, what I found interesting about the court proceedings is the way in which you're expected to behave within court, Matt.
Yeah, you've got to behave proper in court, mister. No screaming and shouting and whatnot.
Oh, smack your ass.
Yeah, that sort of business is frowned upon, you know.
Yeah. So we wanted to offer some advice on this. So I've got five key points that will serve you well when attending court. Firstly, dress to impress. You know, shirt, tie, trousers, even polish the shoes that you've got. Make an effort, because first appearance is what's the word?
It counts.
First appearance counts, you know. You're going to court, a court of law, and dressing appropriately helps you feel the part, you know, suited and booted. Isn't that the words?
Indeed.
So you expect a pat down. Courts are exactly like airports, and some of the government buildings will have a metal detector. Security guards with metal detector wands, a bag, and pocket searches. So don't be annoyed by this. Don't get frustrated. They're just doing a job. So remember that, you know, they're doing their job to keep you and the court safe. Expect emotions to run high in court. I mean, two people are battling against two competing ideas. Again, remember to keep focused, to keep cool, to keep calm. You're there for a reason. And like we said, children.
Indeed.
Yeah. Avoid losing your temper. So especially when emotions are running high, remain calm, composed, and speak with conviction. You and your lawyer, or a Mackenzie friend, if you've obviously secured one, will have an opportunity to prepare your case prior to the court hearing. Use the mediation techniques, such as those that we've done in our latest blog. And we know you're good on meditation, don't we?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
And finally, remember your objectives. You're going into court with a specific reason, right? So do not forget about the reason you're there. Now, this is a process that you have to do, and you have to play the long game.
Indeed, the long game is the winning game. So we hope you found some of this information useful, and as always, we would appreciate your feedback. So please do reach out to us on our social media pages. Come and have a look at the website and the blogs we are writing on a twice monthly basis. Now, before we do sign off, both Lee and I would like to congratulate the justice system, who in the past few weeks have expanded transparency in family courts by increasing the number of journalists who are able to report in these spaces. Traditionally, journalists have not been allowed in family courts, but an extended trial in Crewe, Leeds and Cardiff will now allow such journalists to be inside those courtrooms. Now, this is important because justice shouldn't be something that's hidden behind closed doors. There should be transparency added to it. And we're going to dedicate a future episode of the Dad Podcast to this exciting development. We're also going to add a vlog to our website in the coming weeks to delve into the history and the benefits this brings to all parties involved in family separation, and most importantly, to the children. Well, we're getting to that point in the show, dude, where we're about to close off the shed for the night. Hit us with your thought for the day.
So it takes a long time to learn that a courtroom is the last place in the world for learning the truth.
I love that.
That's my thought for the day.
I like that. Yeah, there's probably some truth to that claim there.
There is.
Absolutely. There is. Yeah.
So come on then, big man, the favourite part of the show. Come on, let's have the dad joke.
Okay, so you know these are probably going to get a lot worse as the year goes on.
It better be better than last week's joke, because last week's joke was, I think it was terrible.
This one's worse, I guarantee it. So here we go, ladies and gentlemen and non-binary folk alike. What do a tick and the Eiffel Tower have in common?
I've got no idea, dude.
They are both Paris sites.
Oh my God. Oh my God, I heard a joke about Jesus the other day, but I'm not going to say it on here.
Let's not say it on here. We might lose monetization like we make money.
Yeah, I wish. That's why I do overtime. So thanks again for joining us in the shed this week, guys. We will be ending the pod in the usual way with the dad creed. So have a good week and take care.
We will see you next week.
In those moments when you feel downcast, when the hope is sucked from your lungs and your gaze is cast to the floor in despair, raise your head up high, and with the thought of the most precious thing in your life, your children, held firmly in your heart, say the DAD creed with me. I believe in nothing more than the love I have for you, not hell nor high water, not rain nor shine, not hate nor despair, or those who would keep us apart with no true cause to do so will change this love. A father's love is like no other, imparted on his soul from the moment he first saw the apple of his eye. The rights of fathers and those of their children are not a privilege. They are a right. A right we will exercise with compassion, care, love and observance of the golden rule. Raise your hands confidently, caringly and with hope. Be counted because not all dads are deadbeats.
And so, if you're interested in having riveting conversations about fathers, their children, rights and agency, look out for DAD on the interwebs and social media. We look forward to seeing you and welcoming you to our conversations.